What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Today, we are going to be talking about a murder case, and it was suggested by one of our listeners, and I hadn't actually heard of this case, but the story definitely deserves to be told. So thank you to the anonymous listener that suggested it, and I think we're just going to get right into it.
Sounds good. If you haven't finished your holiday shopping yet, don't panic. We've got a secret source for incredible original gifts, and that's Uncommon Goods. Uncommongoods.com has the absolute best gifts for everyone in your life. We're talking moms, dads, kids, in-laws, besties, your main squeeze. And it's not stuff you can find just anywhere. Uncommon Goods has unique and creative gifts, often handmade by independent artists and makers. So skip the gifts that scream last minute and find something truly original at uncommongoods.com. Here are some of my favorite things from their site. They have the Starry Night Air Fort that looks like something super fun I could do with my preschooler. Then there's the whiskey making kit, which I know my husband would love. They also have this Christmas murder mystery game, which sounds right up my alley. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. Another option if you're looking for a gift you don't have to worry about getting lost in the mail, Uncommon Experiences are more than just virtual classes. They are unexpected opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways, from cooking and mixology classes to crafts and gardening, and so much more. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same boring old gifts you could find just anywhere. And the great thing is, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, you're helping give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. Uncommon Goods has donated more than $2.5 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/inhuman. That's uncommongoods.com/inhuman for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer, Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
At 6:34 p.m. on October 22, 2013, Diana Chisholm contacted the police in Danvers, Massachusetts to report her son missing. 14-year-old Philip had not returned home from school that afternoon, and his mom was concerned. Police immediately started searching for Philip. His phone was actually able to be pinged and was tracked to the nearby Hollywood Hits Theater, where Philip had purchased a movie ticket and seen a movie, but he was no longer there. They did a second phone ping, and that came back with no results. So they began searching the surrounding areas for him, and news of his disappearance started to spread through social media, but he wasn't found anywhere. And eventually authorities arrived at Danvers High School, and that's when they started to piece together what had happened. Okay. A Danvers police officer began watching the school's CCTV footage and was able to create pretty much a minute-by-minute timeline of what happened after school on October 22nd. But we'll talk about that timeline in a second.
Okay.
At 5 a.m. on October 23rd, Philip Chisholm was found near another nearby town called Topsfield, walking down the middle of a long road in the dark. And that was when Philip was arrested and charged with first-degree murder.
Oh. Okay.
But how did they determine this? Was there a body found? Not yet. But after watching the CCTV footage from the high school, police were able to put together that Philip had murdered his 24-year-old math teacher, Colleen Ritzer.
Wow. Oh, I know. Okay. I've heard. Yeah, I know this case. Well, sort of. Wow.
Yeah. So according to court records, after the school day ended on October 22nd, Colleen had asked two of her students, Philip and then another young student, to stay after school to work on their algebra. According to the other student's later testimony, Colleen had tried to engage Philip by asking him how Danvers compared to the town he had recently moved from in Tennessee. But apparently Philip became visibly upset, so Colleen kind of changed the subject and moved on. And then not long after that, Colleen got up and left the classroom and walked down the hallway toward the women's restroom. Philip was then seen on camera poking his head out of the classroom, then going back in briefly and coming back out with his sweatshirt hood on. Mm-hmm. He then is seen putting gloves on his hand and entering the restroom, following behind Colleen. Minutes later, he's seen carrying the black pants that Colleen had been wearing out of the bathroom. What?
Okay.
He was then seen dragging a recycling bin on wheels, like, you know, like a trash can on wheels, out of the bathroom and out of the school.
That's the footage I've seen, is him, and it's very ominous, because why did he take a trash can into the bathroom?
It's very, After this, he returned home, changed his clothes, and then went to eat lunch at Wendy's. He then went to that theater to watch a Woody Allen film, and then left and was not seen or heard from again until his arrest at 5 a.m. on the 23rd, the next day.
Okay.
Colleen was never seen leaving the restroom. So that's when authorities were able to piece together what had happened. And then shortly after Philip's arrest, Colleen Ritzer's body was found in a heavily wooded area just 50 feet from the high school's athletic field.
Wow, he really didn't think that through at all, which I'm glad.
Not at all.
What did you think was going to happen, sir?
Yeah. And Colleen had been reported the night before. Her family were concerned when she didn't come home from work. Her car was still in the school parking lot, hadn't been moved. They were very concerned. But unfortunately, because she was an adult, I don't think too much was done at first to search for her until they found that CCTV footage and kind of figured out what was happening.
So terrible.
Yeah. When Colleen was found, she was in a, quote, supine position covered with leaves and debris.
What is that? A supine?
Mm-hmm. It's like, let me figure out how to describe it. Basically, like, you're laying horizontally with your, like, head facing up.
Okay. Okay.
So, if your head was facing down with your back up, you'd be in a prone position. And then supine is, like, your back's on the ground. And your, like, head is facing up. Okay. So she was basically, like, laying there on her back.
Okay.
Colleen had been hit in the face, and her throat had been slit with a box cutter.
Oh, my God.
She had also been assaulted, raped, with a sharp object believed to be a tree branch.
Oh, after death?
So there's a lot of controversy about whether she died in the bathroom or after.
Oh my gosh.
But I'm pretty sure she died in the bathroom.
Yeah. I mean, because I could see why they would have controversy about that. Because, I mean, he could have, you know, subdued her and then drug her out there in the, and then, you know.
Right.
Sick.
And the main controversy came from his defense, because she was assaulted twice, once in the bathroom and then once by that object.
Wooded area? Okay. So he himself raped her, but then he also assaulted her with an object.
Yep. And so his defense was trying to say he didn't do that second one, and, like, there was a whole bunch that we'll kind of get into later.
Okay. Who did it then? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, but it's believed that she was dead at that point.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
Yeah. At the crime scene, the scene where Colleen's body was found, authorities also discovered a handwritten note that said, "I hate you all." They found the recycling bin that Philip had rolled out of the bathroom. They found clothing and other personal items of Colleen's. And they found the blood-soaked gloves that Philip had been seen putting on in the CCTV footage.
Yeah, no denying that.
Yeah. When authorities approached Philip walking along that narrow section of Route 1 near Topsfield, they actually found a knife on him. And then, according to a court affidavit, a later search of his bag found a box cutter that was bloodstained.
Okay.
So, once they searched his bag, they basically found, and I'll talk about it in a second, they found a lot more.
Right.
When police asked Philip where the blood on the box cutter came from, he reportedly just said, the girl.
The girl. The woman, mm-hmm. the teacher.
Yeah, no, just the girl.
Okay, you're disgusting.
Yeah. In his possession, Philip also had Colleen's credit cards and her driver's license, along with a pair of women's underwear.
Ew.
At first, Philip claimed that he found all of this at a gas station, like it had just been abandoned, so he grabbed it. And then he changed the story to say that he actually stole it out of Colleen's car from the school parking lot.
Oh, yeah. So she put it there after she had been brutally murdered. Or mm-hmm. the perpetrator did.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever, so, dude. You know, changing your story obviously is never a good look. But police basically knew from the start what he had done, yeah. even though he didn't admit it right away. So that is a good thing, at least in this case, that... You know, once she was found, it was kind of like, okay, he did it.
Yeah.
An indictment against Philip Chisholm was filed on November 21st, 2013, and he was officially charged with murder, aggravated rape, and armed robbery. It took about 2 years for his case to, like, officially go to trial, just because investigation and, yeah. you know, that can always get delayed. But in 2015, it finally went to trial. And I couldn't find if he pled guilty or not guilty, because I'll talk about this in a minute, but his lawyer did say that, like, basically admitted that he did murder Colleen.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure if it goes to jury trial, that means that you are pleading not guilty.
Right.
So his, and like I said, I'll talk about this in a minute, but his lawyer basically tried to say he was suffering from mental illness. So I don't know if he entered a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity or whatever, but it did go to a jury trial.
Okay.
At the trial, the Essex County Assistant DA Kate McDougall outlined what had happened as laid out by the school's video footage. Pathologist Anna McDonald testified at the trial, stating that Colleen's death was caused by both asphyxiation and 16 stab wounds she had received to the neck.
Oh my gosh.
Now, McDonald said it was impossible to identify what killed Colleen first. However, and this is a little bit rough, so just warning, skip ahead a little bit if you don't want to hear this. It is believed that the strangulation was what killed her, because the knife wounds to her neck were so severe that McDonald said it would have been difficult to strangle her after that. Ugh. Yeah, so what I'm thinking is, like, the cuts were so deep that he couldn't, like, physically strangle her after right. that.
So. Yeah, it would be, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you all can figure out what I mean there.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, Philip's lawyer argued that he did murder Colleen, but only because he was suffering from severe mental illness.
That doesn't give you a green light to kill somebody. I don't care.
No. No. And a psychiatrist testified for the defense that Philip had been hearing voices before the murder and that he was in the middle of a psychotic episode when he murdered Colleen. However, it doesn't seem like there was ever any official court psychiatric testing, which to me doesn't really make sense, because if you're trying to argue that he was suffering from a yeah. mental illness, wouldn't you, like, petition the court to do
yeah.
proper, you know, psychiatric evaluation, which to me just proves that he wasn't suffering from this psychotic episode, because
that's your defense.
You found a psychiatrist to say this.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you would want to prove that if that's your sole defense mm-hmm. and you knew it was bullshit. Yeah. So
exactly.
You didn't get it.
It almost feels like to me they kind of, like, came up with that once the trial started and they mm-hmm. were like, okay, this is the angle we're going with. And
this is all we got.
Try to, yeah, try to do anything so he doesn't get, like, life in prison.
Yeah.
Thankfully, on December 15th, 2015, Philip Chisholm was found guilty of the murder of Colleen Ritzer. He was also convicted of rape and armed robbery. And according to WBUR, quote, Chisholm stared straight ahead and did not have any visible reaction as the verdicts were read in Salem Superior Court.
I'm sure he didn't. I mean, yeah. He went and got Wendy's after he killed her. Obviously, this man has
and then
no
saw a movie.
Moral anything.
Yeah, no, he had no guilt. He had no
psychopath
morals. Like,
probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Philip was being tried as an adult facing life in prison. And in Massachusetts, the mandatory sentence for murder for an adult is life in prison without the possibility of parole. Mm-hmm. But because he was a minor at the time of the crime, he couldn't receive a life sentence without the possibility of parole because of some Supreme Court rulings that had happened previously. He basically had to be able to get parole. Which does not make any freaking sense.
Why try him as an adult?
If he's being tried as an adult, then he should face an adult sentencing. But I think they still tried him as an adult, even though they couldn't get that sentence, because otherwise, being tried as a juvenile, he'd probably get a way lesser sentence.
Like 10 years or something.
So I get why they did it, but, like, it's so frustrating because it's like, yes, he was 14 at the time of the crime, but, like, he murdered somebody in cold blood and felt no remorse about it. Like,
that's so young.
Who cares that he was 14?
Like, I know.
So
God, how?
Yeah,
I don't understand, like, these young kids just ruining their whole lives over what?
I know.
Because she asked him about his other town. Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously there could be more backstory to, like, why he was frustrated at her or whatever, but.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he never straight up admitted to it, so we don't know, like, if there was a motive, what that motive was, if he was just angry, if he was just suffering from some sort of break, but no matter what, he did this. On February 16th, 2016, then 17-year-old Philip was sentenced to 25 years for the murder and at least 40 years for the rape and robbery. So these sentences will be served concurrently, and he will not be eligible for parole for at least 40 years.
Which, like,
so
he still has, that's like so much life to be lived after that, though.
Yep, he'll be 54 years old when
he won't do this again.
Yeah, yep, he will be 54 years old when he is eligible for parole, and yeah, it's ridiculous, but unfortunately, that was, like, the maximum that they could give.
And if he would have been...
The judge did everything
they
could.
An adult, he would have gotten life.
Without parole. Yep.
Our justice system makes no sense.
No.
As we know.
Yeah.
We know this.
No, not at all.
It's so crazy.
It's
so frustrating. You know, I do sympathize that he was a child, but when you take an adult decision like that and kill someone, then you, like you said, need to be tried as an adult. Or... Mm-hmm. Sentence
face
as an adult
consequences. Yeah. At his sentencing, the judge said, quote, the crashing waves of this tragedy will never wane.
Yeah, that's so true. The whole thing, his parents, her family, everyone suffers.
Yeah. And his mom, after his sentencing, came out and said she's, like, sad, and her statement was, I didn't write it down, but it was actually very, it was very like harrowing reading her statement too, because she was basically like I'm very sad, but nobody's hurting more than the Ritzer family. Like, it was kind of like, I'm sad for my son and I feel bad, but also, like, I recognize that what he did isn't okay,
right.
And I feel worse for, like, the victim's family and all of that. So
that's,
I was very
good.
Impressed. And he had two younger sisters.
Oh my
so
God.
Now they have to live with that, knowing that their brother did this. Like, oh, it's just, well, it's so heartbreaking.
Hopefully he can be rehabilitated and become a normal member of society once he is let out, because, I mean,
hopefully, but I don't think many people are very hopeful for that.
Yeah.
And in fact,
the brutality of the crime.
Yeah.
I don't blame anyone for believing that.
No. And in her statement during Philip's sentencing, Colleen's mother, Peggy, said, quote, "He is pure evil, and pure evil can never be rehabilitated."
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. And because Philip could not receive a life sentence without parole, it will likely be up to Colleen's family and mostly likely her siblings to one day face a parole board to prevent him from ever being released.
Yep.
And Colleen's father has spoken out about this several times, one time saying, quote, "This is wrong. Don't do it to the families. Don't do it. Think about what you are doing to the victims' families and what they have to go through."
Yeah.
And that's just another layer on top of, like, the fact that he could potentially get out, that the victims' families have to face him, face a parole board, and then live with that and be in fear of that, even though it's 40 years away. It's still, like, that's going to be looming over them their whole lives.
And then you think about, okay, so say his parole gets denied that time, and then they have to go through it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens in a lot of these cases. And those poor families have to endure that, like, reliving. Like, they don't have to relive that hell daily anyway, but then it's, like, thrown in their face.
Yeah, and it's never ending.
Yeah.
In 2016, Colleen's family actually filed a civil suit against the town of Danvers, Danvers Public Schools, the school's cleaning company, and Denisco Design Partnership of Boston, who was the company that designed the school's security system.
Okay.
And they were basically saying that the system was inadequate. And this was actually a new system that had recently been put in, but the school said that even though it was new, it was still, like, the screens and the technology were still relatively outdated, mm-hmm. so it wasn't effective. But in the civil suit, the Ritzers said that the security system was not properly monitored, and they also pointed out that the school's cleaning company was instructed to clean up the blood in the bathroom, and they didn't call the police.
What?
Yeah.
Because they didn't know a crime had been committed, but even still.
But there had to have been, like, a good amount of blood, and it just wasn't reported to police.
Wow.
So it was reported in August of this year, 2022, that the suit was resolved, but no information about what, you know, the conclusion was has been released, and the documents connected to the civil suit have been sealed until 2042.
Okay, that makes sense. And it's not really our business, you know.
No, not at all. I'm just glad that it got resolved.
Yeah, me too. I mean, nothing will ever bring, you know, a loved one back, but the family has to have some kind of restitution for their pain and their suffering. And
yeah,
I mean, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah. To this day, Colleen Ritzer is remembered dearly by her parents, Tom and Peggy, her brother Daniel, and her sister Laura, as well as the Danvers community and all of her colleagues and former classmates and former students and friends. So many people remember how loving she was and how incredible of a teacher she was.
Yeah.
Colleen's mother said, quote, "Colleen matters. Colleen was a caring and loving young woman full of life and a beloved teacher." Colleen's family actually started a memorial fund in her name. And you can learn all about that and more about Colleen's life and what's going on to honor her at ColleenRitzer.org, which I'll link in the show notes.
Okay.
And on that website, it says that Colleen's two biggest passions in life were her family and teaching.
Aww.
Quote, "In 24 years, Colleen selflessly shared herself to better those around her. Those who knew her and those that learned about her many gifts and love of life continue to be inspired by her love and compassion."
She was so freaking young.
She was so young, yet she impacted so many people in just the short time she was here. On the website, there's also a short documentary that was put together by a former student of Colleen's named Sarah Roach.
Aww.
And for the documentary, Sarah interviewed friends and family, former students, and colleagues to tell Colleen's story. And it's called Love Colleen. You can watch it directly on the website, and I'll have that link directly in the show notes. And I would highly recommend you watch it because it's just incredible and you really get a sense of who Colleen was. And it's like crazy how many people remember her and were impacted by her and talk about, you know, how passionate she was about teaching and helping others. And she just seemed like such an incredible person. Her family has also set up several scholarships in her name. And to date, they have awarded 89 scholarships worth over $400,000.
That's amazing.
And they said that a lot of the scholarships go to aspiring teachers and just people that Colleen would have wanted to see be able to succeed.
Yeah.
The Ritzers are doing all they can to honor Colleen's legacy, and I truly think that they're doing an incredible job because it's very clear that Colleen is remembered for her kindness and how she lived, and she really has impacted so many lives in her short time on this earth, but also
even now
after her death.
Yeah.
She's helping people, her legacy is helping people, and so many people remember her and, you know, try to live life as she would want to.
It's always so remarkable to me when families who have gone through these great tragedies can take it and turn it into something positive.
I know.
Like, I don't know if I would be mentally capable of doing that. I mean,
I know.
I would like to think I would, but that just takes a special kind of person, I think.
It really does. They're really incredible, and I think they're, you know, doing such an amazing job in preserving her memory and, yeah, you know, sharing that out. So that's why I was really happy to be able to share this story today. But that's all I have for the heartbreaking story of Colleen Ritzer. It's really such a senseless act on such an incredible human being. And it's just so frustrating that her family are going to have to relive this. It's so frustrating that, yes, justice was served, but it doesn't feel like full justice.
Right.
But I'm so impressed with, despite all of that, her family still pushing forward. Again, I highly suggest watching Love, Colleen, because it really encompasses her life so well, and it's a beautiful tribute to her. So I'd highly suggest you take 20 minutes and watch that, because it really is incredible. And I will have all of that linked in the show notes for you guys to access and learn more about the Memorial Fund and all of that. But thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope you can join me in remembering Colleen and spreading her legacy. And until next time, keep it human.
Bye.